The theme of discussion suggested for the present moment is, has social activity any relation to spiritual practice, sadhana? This question is similar to other questions such as, is the body related to the soul or is the body not related to the soul? Is the world related to God or is the world not related to God? Is time related to eternity or is time not related to eternity? These are all identical questions. You may say the body is not the soul. As has been said everywhere by every saint, philosopher and sage, because the body is perishable, the soul is immortal. Therefore, the body cannot be said to have any relevance to the soul. The world is full of discrepancy, disparity, conflict, evil, painful, which cannot be regarded as the characteristics of God. There is a birth and death for the world also in the sense of the evolutionary process. Evolution is the continuous activity of the structure of the universe, wherein the preceding condition dies for the birth of a succeeding condition. Transient, therefore, is this world. Anityam, asukham, lokam, dukkhalayam, ashashvatam is how the Bhagavad Gita describes this world. Anityam, impermanent. Asukham, unpleasant. Dukkhalayam, an abode of sorrow. Ashashvatam, not lasting even for tomorrow. In this sense, we may say, this world has no connection with God. If that is the case, life in this world has no relation to the aspiration for God. Such negative conclusions follow from visualizing the reality of life from one particular angle of vision. If the body is not the soul, and spiritual sadhana practice is connected with the development of the soul in its advance towards God Almighty, then anything connected with the body also is not spiritual. Is not social activity connected with physical existence? Is social activity a work undertaken by the soul? If you think in this manner, it will mean that any social work has no connection with spirituality. But everywhere, people are praising social welfare work. Do good deeds, do good deeds, do good deeds, do charity, help poor people, be philanthropic. is the conundrum, the slogan of the world, at least at the present moment. Why go so far? Bhagavan Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is emphasizing action again and again. Do the work, do your duty. Loka Sangraha Mevapi is the word used for the welfare, solidarity of the world. Do your duty is the great admonition of Bhagavan Sri Krishna in the Gita. Don't you see a great contradiction here in these statements? How could perishable activity which results in perishable fruits as a result of activity undertaken by a perishable body do any permanent good? Perishable body can engage itself only in perishable activity and only perishable results will follow. So all the expectation of yours in terms of social welfare will also perish with the perishing of the body and the perishing of the physical intention, psychological intentions of a person. If the body is not the soul and the world cannot be identified with God and temporal process is not in any way related to eternity, then there would be no passage to God from this world. There would be a gulf unbridgeable between your psychophysical individual existence here and the aspiration of your soul, a gulf between time process in which we are all engaged and eternity, which is the nature of God, a gulf between this transitory world and the infinitude of God. The problem arises on account of our inability to establish a proper relationship between what is visible and invisible, process and reality is the title of a well-known book by the famous philosopher scientist Alfred North Whitehead. Process and reality is his thesis of his before lectures in Edinburgh. How could process be reality? Because process is a perishable, transitory movement of one condition into another condition. As the great Buddha has told us long, long ago, there is nothing existent, nothing is static, there is no being, everything is becoming, everything is fluctuation, everything dies. All things is a wisp of wind, momentary in every way. This made people to think that Buddha had denied the existence of soul itself. Virtually, this amounts to denying the existence of God also. Which characteristic is attributed by many thinkers to the Buddhism? However, as the case may be, is it possible for us to reach God, to infinity? We ourselves being finite, If there is no contradiction between the finite and the infinite, utter contradiction. It is the difference between day and night. Has any connection be seen between night and day? You may say night and day cannot be related to each other. One is brilliance and there is darkness. But you forget, night and day are obverse and reverse of the same coin of the revolution of the earth around the sun, and when it is darkness in one part of the world, it is light in another part of the world. There is perpetual light and daytime on the surface of the earth somewhere, and perpetual night, daybreak and dusk in other parts of the world. So these are all viewpoints and not ultimate realities. If the body and the soul are two different things and activities connected with the physical existence of a person cannot be regarded as having any relevance to spiritual aspiration, we have to think three times before understanding what the Bhagavad Gita is saying. On one side, the Almighty, represented in the personality of Krishna, says, everything is done by me. And at the same time, there is an injunction upon the human individual, Arjuna, you do your work, your duty. Why should Arjuna, the human individual, have to do any work at all if there is one being only which does all the work? What is the compatibility between individual action and universal activity? The Bhagavad Gita is a very difficult theme to understand. Even if you read 100 commentaries, its true meaning cannot be appreciated, because everywhere you see contradiction between one verse and another verse. Doing your duty, engaging oneself in activity of any kind, according to the requirement of the doctrine of the Bhagavad Gita, is to be set in tune with that principle that all things are done by one being only. Though the two look different in every way, there has to be some relation between the finite and the infinite. If it should become possible for the finite to reach the infinite, else the finite would be finite forever, time bound, process bound, and the infinite would be unreachable. Our aspiration for God, which is what is known as spiritual practice or sadhana, can have relevance only if this world has relevance to God and our action has some connection with that actionless existence, which is supreme identity. The idea behind the Gospel of the Bhagavad Gita here in this context is that action is not a performance motivated or engendered by any particular individual. If individual is the responsible agent of an action, then there would be a repercussion following as a consequence of this individualized action. There would be a nemesis of action. Every action produces a reaction. If you consider action to be that which is motivated by the ideational process of the human individual only, if every action produces a reaction, it is good not to do any action at all. Because it is told us that karma is binding. The binding factor in karma is the inviolability of a act reaction following from the action performed. But the Gospel of the Gita is insistent that you have to engage yourself in such action that you should not produce any reaction. Is it possible to do such a work? The possibility of it is the central meaning of the Bhagavad Gita Gospel. In this sense, we may say all action is not a doing of something by the individual, but a participation of the individual in a universal process or requirement. There is a difference between participation and actual doing. If it is a doing from the initiative of your personal individuality, then you have to bear the brunt of it in the form of the reaction or the nemesis of action, karma phala, to enjoy which or suffer which, you may have to take another birth. But no one would like to do work of this kind, which is binding in its nature, which involves necessarily a very unpleasant reaction and nemesis. In as much as the whole universe is moving in terms of an evolutionary process, no one involved in this process can be said to be keeping quiet. नहीं कस्य क्षणम अभी जादो देखता जा कर्म करो. यू कैनॉट से दैट यू आर नॉट मूविंग वाइल यू आर सिटिंग इन ए मूविंग रेलवे ट्रेन. बट इफ यू बिलीव दैट यू आर मूविंग एंड नॉट द ट्रेन, यू विल बी द फूल ऑफ द फर्स्ट वर्ल्ड. यू आर नॉट मूविंग, इट इज द ट्रेन दैट इज मूविंग. And your movement is a consequence of the movement of the train. In a similar manner, we may say that your actions may bind you due to a foolishness involved in the very causative implication behind it. Even as a foolish person may think that his being seated in the compartment of a train has some connection with the movement of the train. The fact that no one can be inactive, but everybody has to be active doing something or the other, follows from the fact that universal evolutionary process is compulsive in its effect upon everyone organically associated with this process, myself, yourself, down to the very ant and the atom. So automatically every part of the evolutionary process also moves with the evolutionary process. There is activity automatically taking place in every individual part or aspect of this organism of cosmic evolution, whether one knows it or not. That is why Bhagavan Sri Krishna says, even if you decide not to work, you will do it on account of the pressure of Prakriti. Prakriti Swam Niyochati. Prakriti Swam Niyochati means the cosmic process will compel you to be engaged in a kind of activity. You cannot keep quiet unless you are outside the very process of evolutionary activity, which is an impossibility. So, on the one hand, it is true that action may bind you. On the other hand, it is impossible for you to keep quiet without being engaged in some process of action. This is why the Bhagavad Gita gospel is so hard to understand. It is blowing hot and cold from both sides, slapping you on both your cheeks. You do not know what it is saying. You have to understand the difference between individual doing and participation in the work of the cosmos. Why it is told that work must be done, karma kartumi harvati, it does not mean that you have to initiate the action motivated by your own personal will. That is not the intention. The idea is you have to consciously participate in the necessary activity of the development of the whole universe towards self-realization in the absolute. So, if in this sense we are to view the whole world activity and the process of evolution, you will find that willy-nilly you have to engage yourself in some work. If you will not do this work, you will do another work. If you consciously do not participate in the evolutionary process, which includes what you call social activity, you will be doing some negative activity on the impression that it is good for you. Nothing can be good, can be called good in this world, which is not associated with the conscious participation in the evolutionary process of the world. Every individually motivated work is a binding process. So social work should not be done for your pleasure, for your name, fame, authority, and announcement of your name in a newspaper, etc. Every social worker should touch his or her heart and answer why you are doing this work. Why are you doing flood relief? Why are you doing hospital work? Why do you help people in their educational career? Why do you do charity to a beggar? Why do you do it? Suppose you do not do it, what happens? You will have a glib, very unintelligent answer. It is good to help poor people. This is not good. This is a child's answer, that it is good to help people. Who told you that it is good to help people? Where is it written? You will be shocked if any such question is raised. Oh, here is a man who is questioning the validity of good work, social welfare work. If social welfare activity means trying to do good to people in general in some way or the other, the rationality behind it should be known first and foremost. Because there will be some instinct inside the social worker speaking surreptitiously, making it a personal, comfortable activity for maintaining one's position in society, to receive encomium and to earn greater name and more name, more and more social connection with people and incidentally authority over people, this subterfuge of suggestiveness may be there even behind the so-called altruistic activity of people is something to be guarded against. No one can be so careful as to go so deep into one's own mind to find out what is the motivation behind doing social work at all. Because it is good to do social work, it is good to help people. It's a slogan. You cannot go on with a slogan like that. But you must have a reason behind your slogan. Why are you shouting the slogan that it is good to do social work? If everybody dies in the world, what do you lose? You say it is horrible. Why is it horrible? You cannot answer these questions because welfare activity is not a work undertaken by the world of sensory perception. It is something quite different altogether. The concept of total work is difficult to maintain ordinarily. I give you an example which is very intriguing. Thousands of soldiers march in the battlefield to protect the nation. You will tell me, please, what do you mean by a nation? Is it the ground of the earth? Because the earth need not be protected by anybody, by any soldier. Nobody can bring harm to the ground of the earth. The earth itself cannot be regarded as a nation. Mountains and rivers and trees, are they the nation? They don't require to be protected by soldiers. The sun and the moon and the stars and the sky, they constitute your nation. My sky, they say, national sky, national space, etc. We say, they do not require to be protected. But you have to protect your nation. What are you protecting? When you say nation is to be protected, there is an obvious answer to this. It is nothing but the protection of the people living in a particular locality called the geographical ground of the nation. So, when you engage yourself in a war with someone in the interest of the welfare of your nation, it is possible some 25% of the people may die in the war. And nation will win victory. Now, can you say that because 25% of the nationhood has perished in the war, the nation is only 75% alive now? Or is it complete? Can you say 25% of the nation has perished in the war, now the nation is only 75%? No one would say that 75% is not the nation, it is 100%. Even if 50% of people die for the national cause, nation is remaining still complete in itself. How do you make such a statement? Because nation is not people. It is not trees. It is not mountains. It is not earth. It is not rivers. It is a concept in your mind. A totality of an integration of feeling in you, indescribable rationally, is what you consider as a nation. Nation is just a thought in your mind. It is a concept in your mind. I have been giving some other examples also many a time, and to illustrate this point, I will tell you something very humorous. There are 600 members in a parliament. If 500 of them say something, it becomes an act. you will certainly agree with me. If 500 out of 600 unanimously say something, it becomes an act of the parliament. So the only condition is 500 members of parliament to say something. Now suppose 500 of them come here to Rishikesh and sit on the bank of the Ganga and say something. Will it become an act of parliament? No. Why? You will say, it has to be told in that particular place only, which is called the campus of the parliament. Now, what is parliament? You have denied the fact that 500 people constitute members of the parliament by saying that they are saying something here in Rishikesh cannot constitute an act. Very intriguing indeed. But you say that they should tell it in a particular place. Then only it becomes parliament. Can you say the place is the parliament? Yet all the members get out, only the place is there. Can you say the building of the parliament house is the parliament? No, building is not. Now you are saying people also are not parliament, building also is not. Then what else is the parliament? You have got a concept in your mind, a peculiar descriptive notion which you cannot yourself explain. There is a nebulous feeling of what is good, what is bad, what is right, what is wrong, etc. And what I mean to say is, the activity which is known as social welfare work is also a conceptual organization of the faculty of thinking, in the sense that it is commensurate with the supreme concept of existence absolute. You may in one sense say that God also is a concept, not the concept of any particular individual, it is consciousness. When you use the word concept, you are identifying it with the activity of the faculty of the mind or the internal organ of a particular individual. But actually, virtually, it is identical with what you call consciousness, which becomes the essence of God existence itself. So, thought absolute is God. And thought individual is to participate in thought absolute, not universal. If this thought individual, which is at the back of every activity, can be set in tune with thought absolute, it becomes imperishable work, producing a power that can usher in the soul in the direction of the achievement, the realization of the universal thought. It is the mind that is responsible for the determination of the validity of any work, social welfare work or whatever it is. If the mind is confused and it thinks that it is a temporal activity that it is engaging itself in, then temporal result will follow. All your work will be a waste. If you think that all your activity is your activity, because you will go one day, with that all the things that you did also go. But your deeds will not perish if the imperishable element in you, which is the total concept of activity which is universal in its nature, is at the back of your motivation, then it will come with you even after you shed your body. Dharma sthithati kevala na putra dara jisthandi. When you pass away from this world, what you have done follow. But what have you done? You have done some bridge somewhere, and you have built a dam on the river, and you have built a hospital. This is what is coming with you. When you say dharma will follow you, right action will follow you, the result of good deeds will follow. What do you mean by that? All the result of hospital building will come with you. What is it that you are thinking about? Nothing of the kind. It is the extent and the gamut of the universality that has been implanted in your activity, call it social activity, call it by any name, the element of universality, the percentage of universality that is present in your motivation, in your thought, in your speech, and your action, that will come with you. It is only the universal that will take you to the universal. The particular cannot take you there. So any particular activity cannot take you to the universal being. If you think that your activities are particularized, individualized, it is socially in the sense of work connected with perishable human beings, that is not going to help you in any way. Because one day all people will perish. Then all the good deeds that you have done for the sake of people also will perish. Then what is the purpose of all the activity? Activity is the work of God, finally. It is not your or somebody else's. And so-called social work is nothing but the element of the goodness of God present in your goodness of the mind behind activity. You should not confuse yourself and God in a mixture which is chaotic in its nature. Your relationship to God and reality should be known very clearly. Everything that is done is perishable. Good deeds also perish, bad deeds also perish. But the element of universality present in action will not perish. It is up to each person, every one of you, myself, yourself, all, to remember how much is of the universal concept is present in your daily behavior. Or you are totally individualized in your behavior. If you are a totally individualized personality, then nothing that you do will have any work. In that sense, you will say, usually the social welfare work of the present day concept of people has to be revamped today and requires to be refurbished, and it has to be given a proper galvanizing touch by the divinity that is to be present in the activities of people. Is your work having an element of divinity in it? You put a question to your own self. You are doing a lot of good work. Is it a divine activity or a mere shell of activity without any substance in it? The divine element is nothing but the universal element. You have to be a little bit of a philosopher and a good psychologist to understand the worth of life itself. You cannot be a fool and live comfortably in this world, because one day or other your foolishness will bring you a consequence for which you have to repent. You cannot go from this world having achieved nothing worth the while and with nothing that will come with you when you leave this body. You please tell me, what will come with you? You will be flabbergasted at this very question. What for am I living here? If I leave everything here and go like a beggar, having nothing with me in open hands. No, you are not supposed to go like a beggar. You have to garner the harvest of that work, call it good deed, in this world, which is a participation of your total individuality with the total work of the cosmic being. This is the relationship between I am doing everything, as Bhagavan says, and you also do something. You do something in the sense that you are participating with that which I am doing. So my doing and your doing are interconnected very, very vitally, inextricably, and organically. There must be an element of God goodness in you, in the sense of godliness also in your personality. Unless you are godly, even in some little modicum, your actions will have no meaning. Have you some half a percentage of godliness in you? You please think over this matter. Each one of us, you have come for the sadhana meet, for this conference, you are listening to wonderful lectures on spiritual life, etc. Put a question. Have I 1% of divinity in me, or I am bereft of it totally? Am I a skeleton with flesh and blood nerves and muscles. Am I nothing else? Because if you are only an anatomical structure, a physiological movement, which perishes tomorrow, who will go? Nothing will go. There will be a vacuum at the time of passing. That which is of a permanent nature, that which I am repeating as the universal element in you, for its divine element, that comes with you, that will protect you even today. Even at this very moment of your breathing here, you will be guarded by that divine element present in you. Nobody else can guard you and protect you. There is no friend in this world, really speaking, socially construed. Every friend will desert you one day or the other when the conditions of social friendship break. Father and mother separate. Sons and daughters separate. Members go here and helter skelter. There is one friend who is eternally present in you right from your birth, right from ages through which you have passed. Who will come with you wherever you go? Shurdam sarvabhutanam natvamam shanti virakshati. The great almighty of the Gita tells you, know me as your real friend. Who is your real friend? That great universal totality of being is present in you even today, though you are not conscious of it, as a little spark of consciousness, a little intelligence that you have got, you are being alive itself. If this consciousness of the principle of universality is present in some modicum, then all your activities are divine. You may do any amount of social welfare work. But it is not social welfare work, it is divine activity. If Bhagavan Sri Krishna did so much work, do you call it social welfare work? Sri Krishna did not do any social welfare work. What has he done then? He has done divine work. But when the divine work takes effect in the through the personalities of people, it looks like social work. So godly activity looks like human activity. It may look like human activity, it may take the shape of human social activity, doesn't matter, but really it is divine activity. It is God moving, the God in you moving, in the element of godliness present in you, whatever be. The value of your social welfare work, the good deeds that you perform, will depend upon the extent of divinity implanted in your heart. To repeat, the universality of existence that is enshrined in your personality, the universal sustains, universal never perishes, the particular always perishes. All particularized activity therefore will perish. So the question whether social welfare work has any connection with sadhana or not is a moot question which goes very deep into the very core of existence itself. It cannot be answered at once. Offhand. It requires in-depth analysis of one's own personality, the structure of being, and one's relationship with the world. You must know how you are related to another person. You must know how you are related to the world outside. Then also you must know how you are related to God. If you say you have no relation, okay, you say that, then you will be in wilderness of confusion. But if you have some relationship, you tell me what kind of relationship. How are you connected to another person? How are you connected to society? How are you connected to the world of nature? How are you connected to God? You tell me all these things. You have to study the Bhagavad Gita thoroughly, not with a commentary, but under a competent master. Only a God-man can tell you what is Bhagavad Gita teaching. Books, commentaries cannot tell you. You find out such a person. And I would advise you to read Swami Sivanandi Maharaj commentary, which is beautiful. There is Dhanesha Maharaj commentary. It will help you to some extent. But yet, as your mind is puerile, is unable to grasp even the subtle truths of these people, it is good to be under the guidance of a good mentor. So, I will conclude by saying that spiritual welfare work has connection with spiritual activity in the sense that it is supposed to be a movement of the human personality in terms of the extent of universality present in it, minus which social activity has no value at all. It will perish. To the extent the universal supreme being is implanted in your heart, to that extent your good deeds are really good deeds, they will do real good to people outside. To the extent you are minus all universal element in you, your good deeds so-called will perish tomorrow, then you go also with God. Unless you have a real trust in God, if you believe that such a being exists, and you are breathing because of the breath of this Almighty, your existence is actually a meaningless parading of human vanity against which you have to guard yourself. So again I repeat, social welfare work has connection with your aspiration for God, which is called sadhana, but it has no connection if you think that you are doing it independently without knowing that it is nothing but the participation on your finitude with the infinite action that is taking place. If your finitude participates consciously, organically, with the universal activity that is taking place, all your activity is good. It will be a great blessing for you and you will be rewarded for it in the afterlife. But if you are personally doing it with the individualized motive, then that cannot be regarded as any good deed. It has no spiritual value. So in one sense, social welfare activity has a great spiritual value. It is a sadhana by itself. Provided that it is a universalized action with the consciousness of your being rooted in the all-pervading being. That is why Bhagavan Sri Krishna felt an athlete who was Vishwarupa. See me what I am. After that, do your work. So, the work of Arjuna became meaningful only after the vision of the Absolute, which is the Vishwarupa. Before that, he was asking hundreds of questions, unnecessarily, and he never got satisfied. When that vision supreme, which is cosmic, universal, inclusive, yes, was seen before him, he began to feel that he is included within that. His activity is its activity, and all social welfare work and good deed, everything is its work, and it is also your work to the extent that you are participating in that wonderful vision. Do you understand what I am saying? If you have not understood anything, I am sorry for it, because this subject can be carried on for days and days together in the same way as people can go on writing commentaries endlessly on the Bhagavad Gita. Whole life you can speak on this subject, and yet you will find something is lacking. You will never understand the truth of it because you have not tried to implant universality in your life. You have been always a son, a daughter, and a boss, and a father, mother, sister, brother. This is what you have been. You have never been a child of God, even for a moment. That is why this question has arisen. I request you, remember that you are a progeny of the Almighty and you are not a progeny of a mortal father or a mortal mother. This attachment should go. Duty is different from attachment. Duty is a compulsive necessity imposed upon you by your connection with the supreme activity of the cosmos. But other activities are selfish in their nature, motivated by your false feeling that you are a body, a social individual. Great subject indeed. It is a divine discourse to be actually thinking on this subject. So I conclude, social activity has a spiritual meaning. It is a sadhana provided universal element is present. If it is not present, if the universal element is totally absent in your activity, social welfare work has no connection with spiritual life. Hari Om Tat Sat.